SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Churchill Downs, Sirius 219 XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website, stevebick.com. Rainy, the rain continues off and on here at the Downs, and frankly, even though we got plenty, it does feel like it wasn't as bad as it might have been, and it's going to continue to get lighter and just a little, you know, off and on, but the main track, it remarkably, despite the rain, and a good 18 hours probably of off and on inclement weather, main track is pretty good, sealed and muddy on top, but plenty of horses out and galloping, and then horses out that kind of walked and made their appearance. The remarkable Aidan O'Brien team came out in force, not five here and four there and six later. At least, I don't know, 14 of them? It's tough to keep track because the ponies were out there too, and it was something out of the Charge of the Light Brigade. And I'm sure you've seen already, if you have access to the social media platforms, you'll see plenty of pictures of it, because it was got to be taken with a wide-angle lens, I'll tell you that much. Pretty entertaining, and everybody got a kick out of it. Nobody's going to do too much. Certain horsemen don't mind galloping their horses and even two-minute licking over a wet track, including Steve Asmussen and Shug McGahee, notably, actually. Not that Shug has got it's got code of honor, and that's the main focus for the McGahee barn. But most horses kind of just went easy this morning with the track sealed the way it is. And I suppose a little Marley's Freedom and look good. And I'm anxious to hear from Mike Welch. In fact, Mike will join us right before the end of the show today after Jay Pribman in hour three, Nick Luck in hour three as well. It's a bit of an international day in terms of coverage because in the first hour here, we'll also put together Vance Hansen and Kelly Riley from Brisnet and Twin Spires. We'll do a roundtable with them. We'll let them ping pong back and forth with their opinions, and Kelly with a voluminous report, including video links, a terrific resource for your international study, and we'll get opinions from both of them. And of course, Vance also with a strong interest in the international set and how they'll compete and how they mix and match in with these fields. And one thing that, you know, we're also going to be discussing with them and with Nick Luck, the what is going to be soft turf. They might call it yielding by tomorrow and Saturday, but there's not going to be enough wind. It's not even that windy. There's not going to be enough wind or enough sun to do much drying out of the turf course at all. And it took plenty of water before we even got to this most recent 24-36 hour stretch of wet weather. So it's going to be an equation, and there's going to be horses. You know, one of the things about this, there's going to be horses that kind of move up that hadn't shown wet track affinity or wet turf affinities, and there's going to be horses that have shown wet turf affinity that underperform. It's a little bit of a scenario where you can put some guesswork in, but even with the past performances that indicate something of a preference, it doesn't every turf course, especially as we discussed the other day, the sand-based. Yeah, this is different. The sand-based course that you have at Keeneland and at Churchill, the footing is just going to be either to their liking or it's not. And the horses that can power through, they'll power through. So you're saying, well, what's my recommendation? My recommendation? You handicap it based on the, you know, the purity of the form of the horses, and hope for the best. There's going to be some kicking of the cat when it comes to the turf portion of this the next couple of days. But everything else seemingly pretty smooth, actually, and inordinately quiet. I'll probably bring that up tomorrow with him. Certainly, James Scully and Ed DeRosa, they'll be together tomorrow. They weren't based here back in 2010 and 11, but it is shockingly quiet, and certainly will come to life tomorrow. But I'm astounded, and you know there's a lot of people that have come here maybe for the first time for Breeders' Cup, and expecting that the atmosphere is similar when you come for Derby. It's not, and it's never been, but it particularly subdued, and that includes the backstretch. I mean, despite the fact that there's 170 horses that, you know, have come to the racetrack. I mean, obviously the ones that are Churchill-based, they're already here, but you know, there's easily 120 horses that have come from different parts of the country and North America and the world, and yet completely different here than what we get at Derby time. So if you're coming and you're wondering if you've never been to a Derby, and I guess it's like the people that go to Del Mar. If you went to Del Mar for Breeders' Cup and they, well, I've been to Del Mar people will tell you haven't been if you haven't been during the summer. So I will make that same parallel. If you come here for Breeders' Cup and you think, oh, I've been to Churchill, you haven't been here if you haven't come for Derby. We'll get through all kinds of conversation this morning, get more opinions and more color, more history. It's a historic day, November 1st, a notable, particularly this year because it's 80 years ago today, the match race, the Pimlico Special, November 1st. And going back to Seabiscuit and War Admiral, and really a point in history that, as big as it was at the time, I would say, is even more, might even be more widely known now, thanks to Laura Hillenbrand and the film. It almost feels like it's as well known, I would say better known, certainly, than some of the, you know, the more obscure, even Triple Crown winners, an Assault or an Omaha. So, a big anniversary today. I put up a picture, in fact, at Facebook, kind of a composite photograph that marked it, and maybe we'll get a chance to play one of the newsreel cuts to celebrate 80 years ago today. And of course, as the times you've heard Leon Blushewitz on the show, Blue was there. As a boy, it's pretty cool, and it's hard to believe he acts like he remembers it well. I mean, he would have been, I think, what, seven? What is he? He's 80, 86, 86 or 87? So something in that range. Should also mention that last night had the. Really a wonderful time. I put up a picture of Marty McGee. Marty, among the honorees last night at the National Turf Writers and Broadcasters banquet. And it was really nice. I had not been to 4th Street Live, to that enclosed stretch of 4th Street downtown. I haven't been there in ages. And it's different in the fall. When the weather's not nice, it's not as fun and special down there. But Whiskey Dry hosted it, and a terrific choice. And it was an absolute... I've been to about 6 of these when broadcasters were added to the Turf Writers group. And this was the nicest. This was the best. And Marty receiving the Walter Haight Award for it's basically a lifetime achievement as a Turf Writer. Donna Barton Brothers, the Jim McKay. The Joe Palmer went to Jim Gluckson, met his sister and his mom. They were in from Florida and Scarsdale. That was fun. Got some common friends, in fact, from Scarsdale. The Rossums. Yes, those Rossums. And the Martine Belloc Award that honored her courageous and selfless act during the San Luis Rey fire, and Mike Smith as well honored, and the introductory comments by Tom Hammond introduced Donna, and Jay Pribman introduced Marty. Marty had two tables full of families and friends, and his brother, obviously, and friend that, in fact, I got to ask him, the friend that, retired trainer that came in from Maryland, unbelievable. Marty held in the highest regard. Everybody on that, among those honorees, held in the highest esteem. And Mike Smith, introduced by Bob Baffert. That was fun. Bob and Jill Baffert in attendance. Baffert in high spirits, I'll tell you right now. He's clearly not worried about too much. Things, in fact, West Coast just galloped. In fact, out there hobby horsing around. And really a delightful evening. Tom Law, Saratoga native, is the president of the organization, and it was really nice. We had a meeting. We have meetings twice a year before Breeders' Cup and before Derby, and created a historic preservation committee, which I'm going to spearhead. We'll talk about that at some point. Let's take a break. We've got Vance Hansen and Kelly Riley coming up. We'll touch base with Tony. Also with Doc Danner, Larry Snyder, I mentioned at the end of the show with Gary Young yesterday. Larry Snyder passed, and Doc, we're here in Louisville. Should get Doc on. Haskin and Shulman, too, 10:30. Lots to do. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There are places where being who you are is a punishable offense. These places have many names, but the ones who flee have one. Refugee. And it is in the name of the refugee that Hyas has dedicated itself for the last 130 years. Created in the name of the Jewish people, 4.5 million rescued and resettled so far. When they said, "Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free," we were the ones at the docks helping them breathe free. Only now it's a farmer from Darfur, a shop owner from Syria, a family from Ukraine, a child from Colombia, a Christian from Iran, a gay man from Uganda. The 65 million souls who still wander the earth in search of sanctuary. Why? Maybe Maybe it's because being Jewish means you don't have to be reminded never to forget. Hias, for the refugee.
Visit HIAS.org to understand the mission and support the work of Hias.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BridgeNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BridgeNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BridgeNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BridgeNet.com/APR. The BridgeNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BridgeNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BridgeNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Porchbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Porchbills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Porchbills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Porchbills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Was that a warning? You broke my heart. You took it, darling, and you tore it apart. You left me sitting in the dark crying. You said your love for me was dying. I'm begging you, baby, baby, please. I'm begging you, baby, baby, please. Turn on the light, let it shine on me. Turn on your love light, let it shine on me. Let it shine, 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 let it shine.
We're back at the races. Coming up on 20 into hour one on this Thursday, 24 hours away from Breeders' Cup 2018 and the Juvenile Showcase, the Future Stars Friday tomorrow, and a place where, of course, the turf portion, the juvenile turf races, and the new juvenile turf sprint, a big chance for the international set to make an impact on the cup before we even get to Saturday and the Classic and the turf, the mile, and the filly and mare turf. The work of Vance Hansen and Kelly Riley at BrizNet, and it's going to be an international day because Nick Luck will be with us in hour three as well. So you're going to get all of your questions answered on the Invaders and Kelly Riley's posts and her previews, including links to videos. People have been not struggling, but have been kind of gathering the various places where you can watch replays, and Kelly's done a lot of that work for you. And, of course, Vance we talk to on a regular basis, too, about Dubai and Ascot and so forth. And so absolute pleasure to put them both together. I think they're in the same office this morning. They're over in Lexington. They're going to follow the cup from there. And you basically dumped Scully and DeRosa on us over here in Louisville. Vance, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
And Kelly?
Good morning. So delighted to talk about Breeders' Cup.
Absolutely, and you both have been doing plenty of work, and I think yesterday Vance with his long shot column, and Vance has absolutely scored with these kinds of horses historically, and Kelly, you basically navigated every nook and cranny of the international race courses. And to be honest, we'll start with you. To be honest, when it came to this juvenile set tomorrow, there were some obscure ovals that that are in these PPs.
Like Hamilton?
Yes, that was one.
Some friendship provincial tracks as well.
But yes.
Yes, definitely. That just shows, you know, the old adage about, you know, good horses coming from anywhere, and you just have to just basically follow the form lines and see where they take you. And that's one of the things, as you can tell. I mean, I'm sure it must take, you know, quite a while just reading through all my stuff to begin with, but you can imagine the time that goes into just trying to track down, okay, who are these horses who finished around this Breeders' Cup contender? What did they do before and after? Does this race, you know, on paper, this looks like just a modest race. Did it produce anybody of note? So that's something that definitely, you know, try to you know, turn over, you know, every stone and see if there's anything there. And sometimes you can, you know, find something interesting. Sometimes it's more of a dead end, but it's definitely the legwork that's worth doing, just because I'm always afraid of missing something. Like, oh my gosh, if I'd only looked up this one extra horse, I would have found something. You know, so my obsessive compulsiveness definitely comes into play on those reports.
Let's start with the Juvenile Turf Sprint, and it'll kick off the Breeders' Cup portion of the weekend. And if we're going to do it in post position order, we're really starting with something impressive and unique and stunning. And that, of course, is Soldier's Call, a 2-year-old colt who made his 7th career start, never off the board in his 7 career starts so far. He began his career at Linkfield in May. In the Prix Labbé against Elders, something so audacious that it's something that Wesley Ward did, of course, a couple of years ago. But this is something pretty stunning. And I mean, how imposing off of that effort is Soldier's Call in this field?
And see, the thing that I loved about his effort there, just aside from the fact of being beaten the neck. You know, all of the neck in third, and of course you're getting a weight break as a 2-year-old, but even so, other 2-year-olds have tried it in recent years, and it's been 40 years since a 2-year-old won the Abbe, and he was so close. And the thing that really impressed me about was the way he did it, was the fact that, you know, he was basically, you know, pressing Batash, who was the defending champion, the favorite, and Soldier's Call was actually pressing him, you know, most of the way, wore down Batash, got his head in front, looked like he was about to win. It was a classic case of winning the battle and losing the war, because then Soldier's Call got nabbed right at the end by Mab's Cost and Gold Vibe, so he's third beat in the neck. But to me, it was also the psychological dimension of the way he did it. It wasn't just a case of your horse running well. It was a case of having to eyeball an older sprinter, favorite, you know, top-class animal, and basically winning that war of wills with Batash. And then just getting nabbed at the end. So that was really impressive to me. And, of course, you know, if you run back to that, you know, that is just a sterling piece of form. But that's the other thing with analyzing the internationals. You can, and I know personally I drive myself crazy, you know, doing it, is, you know, the key question always that you keep coming back to is, but will they run back to that in this particular set of circumstances that's totally different? And, you know, obviously he's navigating a turn, but the thing that makes me wonder also is just the fact the ground might be, you know, pretty testing. And he did win on good to soft in France. And this is where we also kind of get into almost like a, you know, Byzantine distinctions of how soft is soft and exactly how much moisture will be in the Churchill course. And you know, so for those reasons, like, is he going to be like in really like another pace battle up front? And maybe in testing conditions, is that going to make him a little more vulnerable to somebody flying late, like O'Brien, Sergei Prokofiev, for instance? So that's the scenario I have in my mind. He could, they're just on form and class. You know, is he just going to basically get away from them and hold sway, or in the conditions that aren't going to be terrible? I mean, they're not going to be quick for sure, It's just now we're just basically trying to figure out exactly how soft it's soft. And you know, that's a difficulty that you're running into with the Europeans across all the turf races, because you can have form that you can, you know, you don't want soft necessarily, but then maybe you can get away with it if it's just mainly like a basically good. You know, so they might not need rock hard conditions, but is it gonna be in the spectrum where they'll handle it fine and be effective on it, or is it gonna be a little too much given the ground for them? And that's something that we're just going to have to try to, you know, adapt as the races go on Friday and Saturday and see if there are any, you know, significant changes and, or, you know, if the results tend to give us a little more of an inkling of exactly how the ground is riding. But it's another variable to deal with.
There's no doubt, and I've brought it up immediately. In fact, it might have been the first thing we discussed on Monday, and I opened the show with it, given this rain, and of course the course was pretty sodden even before, you know, this 36 hours of weather, and it's going to be random. The other issue of it is that turf course. There's no set path that is going to be necessarily the same as any other. The inside is going to be at least pristine because of the rails, the temporary rails that are up protecting it. They'll come down for tomorrow and Saturday, but all that means is you've got an area that isn't going to have as many, you know, as many chunks taken out of it. Then there's portions basically from about the four path out where, you know, the course is, you had horses yesterday during the turf works and the turf gallops with mammoth. They weren't even, there were works, but there were clods flying. I mean, it is going to be really just random. I don't know how else to you know, what other word is appropriate. Vance, what's your feeling about what to expect from this turf course and throughout the 2 days?
Well, watching a video with the Nick Luck and the track superintendent yesterday, it sounds like it's going to be, you know, good. No worse than yielding once everything starts drying out. So I expect the course, based on its history and on the expertise of the superintendent, to be in pretty good shape. I've also seen some people theorize that the inside, because it's so pristine and hasn't been run over, it actually will be a little bit deeper, perhaps, than other parts of the course. So, like Kelly said, we're just going to have to take it race by race, see what develops, and, you know, pay attention to some of those horses that are breaking from the rail, see, you know, if they're struggling, if the jockeys are going to find out really quick, you know, what parts of the course are favorable and which ones are not.
Let's touch on the horses in here in the juvenile turf sprint, and it just so happens, Vance, I know that one of the prices that you suggested is in here, the five long shots to follow, and it's a horse that's already come up on the show this week, and that's Stillwater Cove. In fact, she was just out on the racetrack minutes ago, and she cuts back from the mile back to the Bolton Landing distance where she was so impressive at Saratoga. I mean, she runs back to that effort. She's a big player in here.
Absolutely. And she, in that Bolton Landing, she was facing her stablemate, Chelsea Cloisters, who was much more well bet in that race, and she wound up beating her pretty handily in their first race back. And then, you know, I basically just chalk up her good fifth in the Natalma just to being at a mile. It was just simply too far for her, too far of a stretch. She hit the front in the stretch and just got outrun and outfinished by some fillies that wanted to go the distance. So I really like these kind of cutback types. You know, they show their ability in class to last at a distance longer than they normally might. I just think this filly is one to watch cutting back to 5.5.
Who else do you want to use in here?
I mean, everybody who's watched the replay of Sergei Prokofiev's Cornwallis Stakes at Newmarket couldn't be anything but impressed. It was really blocked behind a wall of horses and tipped outside for running room late and then just kind of burst with a good acceleration and won easily. And, you know, Coolmore won this race. Well, it wasn't a Breeders' Cup. It didn't have a Breeders' Cup label on it last year, but the Coolmore did win the Juvenile Turf Sprint at Del Mar on the Breeders' Cup undercard last year. I think they're sending another strong contender in this horse. And, yeah, I think, and I'm going to echo earlier what Kelly was saying about Soldier's Call. I think it's Sergei and Soldier's Call, the horses to beat here.
And you'll use Stillwater as a price to spice things up.
Yes, I will.
Kelly, back to you.
Yeah, lay out. Add one other thing on Sergei Prokofiev. The other thing that's interesting about him is, of course, Newmarket was riding. You know, ground was much better that day when he fired through the field, and it was just absolutely devastating performance from him. The thing that I also go back to for him is the fact that he was like one of the really like highly touted O'Brien juveniles at the very beginning of the season. He was one of the leading Royal Ascot contenders. And he has form on rain, soft, and ground in Ireland when he was really impressive, the way he quickened. I mean, sometimes you can see like if the ground is bad and they're just basically slogging through it, and they're slogging through it better than the other ones are slogging through it. But on, you know, early, I think it was, you know, I have to double-check the date, but he really, like, lengthened stride and picked up over the ground. And again, this is where we get into, well, exactly how does that ground compare to what it will be, you know, Friday? You know, and that's where you can, you know, basically, you know, tie yourself in knots trying to figure that out. But just in terms of knowing that the ground was, you know, had plenty of moisture in it, and the fact that he was able to really, like, lengthen and quicken and pick up and just absolutely, you know, crush them, you know, to me, that gives me a little more confidence that he'll be in a position to handle whatever he has Friday. It's actually, I'm looking up, it was just the day that he broke his maiden, it was at Navan. It was yielding to soft, 5 furlongs. And, you know, again, it's like we have to, you know, basically, you know, use whatever information we have available and try to extrapolate as best we can. But that just makes me think that he'll, if he could do that on that kind of surface that day, even though, you know, he wasn't, you know, facing anybody significant, just visually, the way his stride pattern looked, and he looked like he was getting it over it well, lengthening, quickening really, really well. And that, so, you know, sometimes also I'll try to look for a horse that looks like they're, you know, they've had form in the past. If they kind of hit a flat spot, then it looks like they're cycling back to where they were. And that's the other reason I think he's really interesting in there.
Kelly, I want to hit before we move to the juvenile fillies turf and the juvenile boys. I want to at least get a very quick read on the rest of the invaders, and that includes Pocket Dynamo for Phoenix, Queen of Bermuda as well for William Haggis. I've already told the story, the incredibly tragic situation attached to Well Done Fox, but we haven't really talked much about him as a horse and a contender, and yet he's been in close quarters with Soldier's Call and Sergei Prokofiev, and yet he's going to be completely overlooked in here.
Yeah, and he's one of those that to me strikes me as like what you might call like a reliable yardstick, that, you know, he's capable. You know, he can run his race. He can run a good race. He just looks like, to me, and, you know, as usual, I always qualify everything. I could be wrong. He just looks to me like he's not quite at the level of Sergei or Soldier's Call, but he is definitely, you know, the type that if he runs his A race, he can be involved. You know, there's no doubt about that. And he's, you know, and that's the problem also with so many of these races, where depending on, you know, if they're going to reach top form on the day, does that make them an exotics player when otherwise they look a cut below? You know, and that's the evaluations you're constantly making with all these horses. But yeah, he's definitely, any time that you have, you know, those company lines and he's placed to the two top Europeans in the race, that just obviously makes you sit up and look at him. And, you know, in terms of Pocket Dynamo, I mean, he was so, I don't know if unlucky is the word, but in the Norfolk, you had to feel for him, because when he hit the line with Shang, 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 it almost looked like he got there, you know. And then there took however long we took for the photo, and then you looked at it and you thought, oh my gosh, the poor thing lost by like a whisker. So it's like it's the whisker between having the win and you're in victory over Wesley Ward filly and not, you know. So he just, you know, he's, and the thing that about Pocket Dynamo is that he just, it looks like he tries so hard, you know. And that's something that you have to appreciate as well, because not just the Norfolk, but you know, when he won that conditions race, you know, in France before Royal Ascot, it's like he just kept digging. It looked like the other horse was just going to get him, and he just kept digging and digging and sticking his neck out and kept his nose in front. And similar in the Robert Papin, even though he lost, it's like, you know, it looked like he was going to be swamped once he started laboring, like he's setting the pace, laboring a little bit, and then he just kept trying. And he only gets beaten like a length and a quarter. But you could see if he didn't have that attitude, he probably would have been beaten like twice that. So you have to, you know, love a horse. It just looks like he loves his job. He tries hard. And he's coming out of the same race as Sergei Prokofiev, since they were both in that Cornwallis. And he just, Pocket Dino was coming off a layoff because he'd been, you know, his trainer Robert Collins said he'd been really, really sick. So he had, you know, a couple months off. So he was just coming back in the Cornwallis, so you figured he probably would need the race anyway, and he just had literally nowhere to go. If you watch the replay, he's buried on the rail. He has to keep desperately trying to pull out. Not only is he just stuck in traffic, but he's got getting buffeted. You know, he's just basically just getting scrimmaging, barging match, and then when he finally gets free, then he has a little bit of daylight, and he can try to, and he gets up for fifth. So you can see, even then, he's basically, you know, I think, you know, an ordinary horse might have just said, you know, the heck with this today. It's just not working for me today. You know, try again tomorrow. But he just never quit. You know, so you have to appreciate a horse that you just know is just going to, you know, lay his body down and do his utmost. And another one to mention, there was the Queen of Bermuda. She's certainly going to like the fact that it's soft. So it can't be soft enough for her. So that's
nice. Yeah, don't we prefer So Perfect to Queen of Bermuda if we're going to consider the two Coolmores?
Well, Queen of Bermuda is Haggis.
Queen of Bermuda is that's right. Is the Haggis? That's right. That's right.
Yeah, but So Perfect. Yeah, I mean, So Perfect obviously brings, you know, terrific form. There's no doubt about that. I mean, she almost won the Phoenix against the boys. I mean, she was really closing, you know, brilliantly in that Phoenix, and Advertised, who bring, you know, was a terrific second in the Coventry, to Calix, who was since sidelined. But she, So Perfect was, you know, she almost won that race. She was flying at the end, and of course she was a very good third most recently in the Cheveley Park to Fairyland, who I really think is top class. I love Fairyland.
Yep.
And So Perfect was just third to her and to the Mac and Bullet, who runs the Juvenile Phillies Turf. But the one thing about So Perfect, the only thing that, and of course, on form, she's, I mean, just absolutely, you know, golden, is the fact that they're, you know, of two minds about whether to go in the Juvenile Turf Sprint or the Juvenile Phillies Turf. And of course, they have just wonderful for the Juvenile Phillies Turf, but I mean, now, maybe the fact that the ground is softer will bring stamina more into play, you know, and that would definitely make a difference. But to me, it's if you're trying to decide whether to go 5.5 or a mile, I'm thinking, is this going to be a little bit on the sharp side for her? Because even if you're placing in these major 6-furlong tests in Europe that are down the straight, 5.5 around a turn in American conditions might be a little sharp for you. But again, that's, she does. You know, she does have a win, you know, Maven on Yielding to Soft. So, you know, she based on that anyway, even though it was just a maiden, based on that, you'd think that she would be, you know, suited to handling what she'll encounter tomorrow. But it's just, I'm just not sure about the distance. I would have been a little more encouraged if it were always clear about which race she was going to. And that's, but again, that's another one of those things that sometimes I pull myself off sides because I glom on to some other fact that ends up not really being material. But it's just another fact that I get in my head, and sometimes I, you know, exaggerate the importance of it. So from that standpoint, I might be making way too big a deal about that, because just as a bare piece of form, I mean, she's absolutely a win contender on form.
Finally, before we go to the Juvenile Phillies, Kelly, your top three Euros, that rank them 1, 2, 3.
Well, I would I'm going to give an edge, although this might be the totally wrong thing to do. I'm going to give a slight edge to Sergei Prokofiev only because of the pace and course dynamics that might just make Soldier's Call a little bit vulnerable in the end. But so I give a hair's breadth edge to Sergei Soldier's Call. And then, for the third Euro, just in case I'm making too big deal about the targeting, I'd say So Perfect. But I'd also echo what Van said about Svetlana Kova. I think she's really interesting from a U.S. perspective in there. And in our Twin Spires betting guide, I actually put her third in my top three for the juvenile turf sprint. Rightly or wrongly, we're basically in agreement about Stillwater Cove being really interesting in there.
8-2, 10-4, basically, as an amalgam. And it's interesting that there's been very little interest, it seems, in the morning line favorite of Strike Silver, who has been fine. Has run three nice races on both dirt and turf, and there's been very little conversation about Shang, who it feels like everybody is against. The domestic horse that of this group, and it's kind of fun because you got six fillies and you got six boys. The domestic for me that is the most intriguing, and of course Stillwater Cove, went and competed in the Albany, so is still a domestic player. But Bulletin off the one fabulous performance down in Hallandale, so I think Bulletin is going to make his way onto. My juvenile turf sprint plays. Let's go to the juvenile fillies. Vance Hansen and Kelly Riley are with us. And, of course, you can read on the Twin Spires blog both Vance and Kelly's work, which is terrific, as you can tell. And we'll start with you, Vance. The juvenile fillies turf, we've got, one of these overwhelming Chad Brown favorites. And obviously, the variable, again, is the softish turf. And she already has actually encountered turf with give. And so that only, it further enhances her, her aura coming into this. What are you doing in here? And which of the imports intrigue you the most?
Well, I've kind of, based on the history of the race, the European fillies have not been as productive in this race as they have been in the juvenile turf. And considering I wouldn't say the two-year-old filly division in Europe is lackluster. I think that'd be a little bit too strong, but it just didn't seem to me personally to be a very strong division from what we've seen so far this year. So I'm basically what I made for my selections. I'm sticking with the domestic horses on top in this race. I'm going for Concrete Rose on top and Newspaper Record. I'm going to try and beat, despite her, like you alluded to, her excellent form on soft ground. The European import I would probably be most interested in is East. The daughter of Frankel, I think it's Frankel's first Breeders' Cup starter. She's hung out in post 14 in this race, but she's going to be taken. The plan was, I assume, to be taken back anyway, and she comes off a win in the Prix Thomas Brion at Saint Cloud over 7 furlongs, and a very good piece of form there over a left-handed course. And she won on soft on debut at Hamilton, which Kelly also alluded to earlier. I just have some, form and speed questions regarding some of the probably more fancied European invaders in here, like Just Wonderful, Lily's Candle coming off the Marcel Boussac win, and the Macam Bullet. And La Pelosa, of course, came over already to North America and won the Natalma. It wasn't a very strong race, or strong figure race, it didn't appear to me, although she won impressively. But she's just, I don't see her getting that kind of pace set up in the conditions on Friday. So to sum up, I'm sticking with the Americans here, but East and the daughter of Frankel probably has maybe a little bit more upside than some of the other European compatriots.
Well, Jamie Spencer is going to have to work out a trip from the 14 hole with East, and we have seen it done, particularly here, and this will come up between now and tomorrow. It was certainly with Azira and what Ryan Moore's going to have to figure out with her, because she does seem to have a chance. But boy, Byron King of the form, he put up the numbers on that added distance, the mile and 3/8, that are really imposing in terms of a win candidacy. Those extreme posts, 11-14, really compromised, and even the 9 and the 10 have been problematic. And that's the three turns, you know, the mile and 3/8. But even here, going the mile, there's a little bit of room to the turn, a little bit more. But you know, how much you have to use an outside, a horse that's outposted early to gain position is going to come into play. Kelly, there's some fascinating storylines within the international group, and I mentioned some far-flung racetracks that aren't as well known. Macam Bullet is a filly that I brought up with Nick Luck about a month ago, and I had read some things about her, and she caught my eye, not the least of which is that she started her career at Carlisle, and I named our filly, our homebred filly, after the Carlisle Bell, the oldest trophy in the sport. And so when I saw Carlisle, there was an immediate affection for the Macam Bullet, and I think she's pretty interesting in here. She's really a fairyland away from being, you know, one of the choices, probably. I mean, running into fairyland and running her into two photographs. There's the story of Lily's Candle with Buzz Schwartz buying her about 20 minutes before the race, and there's a lot of fun stories here. Lady Prance-a-Lot is going to be 40-1, and Richard Baltus was absolutely felt it was imperative for her to get into this race. I brought this up yesterday. He loves her and was really sweating out being chosen into the field. Just wonderful. Comes with the, you know, with reputation. La Pelosa is a horse that Nick Luck identified about 6 weeks ago as a major player. Your thoughts on this group of fillies?
Yeah, it really is fascinating, because you're dealing with some really interesting prospects, all being put in a new set of circumstances to see, you know, who sinks or swims type thing. And the thing that I find, you know, interesting about, you know, Just Wonderful is the fact she won the same race her dam did. Her dam, Waiting, won the Rockville at Newmarket. Just Wonderful won the Rockville. Sadly, Waiting never raced after that. And she was such an interesting classic prospect, you know, beautifully bred, you know, daughter of Manjou, descendant of the great Urban Sea, therefore related to Galileo and Superstars. So, I mean, to me, it's like Waiting. It's always one of those what might have been. So I would love Just Wonderful to basically have the great career her dam never got to have after her two-year-old year. And you know, the thing about Just Wonderful, too, is that she hasn't, you know, she's had some consistency problems, that she can look brilliant one day and so-so another day, and it's like, which one are we going to see? I mean, she did handle good to yielding when she won that Flame of Tara at the Cara and really picked up beautifully. So she has a turn of foot that we've seen on both rain-affected ground and, you know, very quick conditions. And you know, to me, it would be wonderful, no pun intended, if she could step up. But having said that, I mean, between, you know, not just the historical trends, but, I mean, newspaper of record just looks like a really, really serious animal. And not, I mean, the funny thing is when she'd won her first two starts, I was thinking, oh, gosh, too bad they were both on yielding, because, you know, I think she'd be just as you know, effective on firm, but now we'll have to just, you know, see. Never dreaming at the time that the ground would really be a serious factor. I guess I should have, you know, Churchill in November, that it probably would have had a bit of moisture in it. But so now, you know, it looks like newspaper record. You know, it's a good thing we know that she's effective on really yielding turf. And you know, the other thing about her is not only, you know, the fact that she's proven on rain, soft, and ground, but I mean, the fact that, you know, newspaper of record is going to get a forward position. She's going to have a good tactical position before she kicks on. And I think that's the other key thing, is if she were going to try to come from, you know, well back, then it might be a case of who gets the right trip and who's stuck in traffic and all the usual stuff that happens with horses trying to come from well off the pace. But for newspaper record, you know she's going to work out the right trip. And I just, you know, and barring some, you know, unforeseen regression, I just don't see how she's not already clear by the time, you know, the major European players play their hand. You know, and that's, you know, that's why I, you know, to me, I would have to think that Chad Brown is going to win another one just because, you know, between her profile and her running style.
Which Euro gets in for a piece? Because I think a lot of people are going to structure their tickets, keying newspaper of record, and then trying to figure out if there's going to be a 25, 28 to one shot that either clunks up or you know, grabs a share or, you know, runs a surprising race. Which Euro is going to be the biggest overlay?
Well, that's an interesting question because, of course, Just Wonderful is going to get plenty of play.
Right.
East, I think, you know, I would definitely, again, Vance and I are kind of channeling each other on this. I think East is fascinating because of the way she's won both her races. That Hamilton Novice was on soft, and I thought just her placement was interesting there. She's actually the sail topper at the Gores Bridge, what they call a breeze-up sail, our two-year-old training sail. She was actually the top seller there. And I thought it was fascinating that trainer Kevin Ryan started her out in a novice race at Hamilton where not only was she against the field of experienced males, but a couple of her rivals were already winners. So he's putting her in, you know, he didn't even bother with a maiden. I mean, he's going straight to a novice. And the fact that she was actually the 9-4 second choice in there. So there was obviously, you know, the word was out on her, so to speak, you know, early on. And I just love the way, you know, her attitude, just her the vibe she gave off. Because you would never know that she was the only first-time starter in the race. I mean, you know, she came from, like, just off the pace. It's like she lowered her head. It's like she's attacking the ground. She just lowered her head, went off, and just, you know, just rolled by. And the third placer came back to win a nursery at Doncaster. So, you know, obviously it's not, you know, stakes form, but still it showed that she was, you know, beating, you know, at least for that race, for that type of race, she was beating, you know, useful horses. And then, of course, the fact that she went to, you know, that she went to the, you know, Briand and just absolutely galloped all over them in that race. And her form, that form actually ties in with she'd beaten a couple horses that had been running against the Black Album. So, I mean, who runs on the juvenile turf. So, I mean, actually, and this is another kind of, I don't know if angle's the right word, but kind of mental exercise I go through in looking at these. I think, well, she ran and just absolutely blew the doors off the boys in the Briand. What if they had decided to go to the Boussac 2 days later? And if she's in the Prix Marcel Boussac, does she win that? Does Lily's Candle win that if East is in it? And of course, and that's the kind of, you know, unknowable counterfactual that you use. That's just basically a thought exercise. And that's sometimes how I can have some, you know, interesting ideas that work, or more often than not, you know, I tend to get into, you know, overly theorizing things that don't work out, but that is, well, one of the things that you just have to want to get, given her, you know, her terrific acceleration and the fact that that's the Prix Marcel Boussac that Lily's Candle upset, you know, it was just a totally bunched up finish. And whenever you have, like, you could basically, as the old adage goes, whenever you can throw like a blanket over them, you have to wonder, you know, what is really the strength of this race if they're basically separated by not very much. And, I mean, Lily's Candle makes perfect sense on paper in the sense that, you know, she's proven it a mile, proven on soft ground. It's just the question of, you know, that Marcel Boussac, you know, wasn't the deepest race in the world, even though it was a Group 1. The best British and Irish fillies weren't in there. And, you know, it was a kind of case of a perfect storm for her. Again, on paper, you know, she's totally logical, but is that the same level of form as the other one? So that's why I think, you know, in looking at these horses, it's not just, you know, it's also sometimes the case of the dog that didn't bark. Again, that might be a way that I, you know, I get myself into, you know, a little more difficulty in extrapolating too much or speculating too much. But I do think it's sometimes interesting to take a step back and just, you know, try to look at the bigger picture and see, you know, would this have happened if somebody else had been in there, you know?
Gets us to the juvenile turf, and there's company lines here that are very notable. And the presence of one particular horse who didn't make the trip over, and that's Too Darn Hot, who, if Too Darn Hot had shown up here, would have been 4-5, and the fact that Arthur Kitt was well in arrears, beaten 4 in the Solario at Sandown, and also Anthony Van Dyke, who was within about the same, about 3 or 4. We go back to the Dewhurst. I said earlier about Azira. Dettori is going to have to work out the 14-hole trip. Ryan Moore's 14-hole is here on Anthony Van Dyke, who's 4-1. There's also a company line to consider in here, looking at Line of Duty. And Line of Duty's win over Wonderment in the Prix de Condé is important because Wonderment came back the other day and won the Criterium. And that only, you know, further enhances Line of Duty's credentials coming in here. 10-1, William Buick, Appleby, and a lot to like, I think, among the Euros in the boys' race for Line of Duty. You've also going to take a look at the Black Album, as you mentioned earlier. This is the Team Valor Gary Barber player, Maurice Diamond from Mark Johnston. What are we doing in here, Vance Hansen?
Well, you mentioned form lines. Anthony Van Dyke also has a good one with Quarto, who he only finished about a little over a length behind in the National Stakes at the Kerr, and Quarto is another good, exciting young prospect. You know, once Anthony Van Dyke drew the 14, I think that sent a lot of people scurrying to find an alternative, you know, even though those form lines are really, really good. You know, as we brought up a few times already, the 14 is just an absolutely dreaded post. And, you know, like a lot of other people this week, I've pretty much gravitated toward Line of Duty as a logical alternative for much of the same reasons you brought up. You know, good form ever since he started out the Prix de Conde. You mentioned Wonderment winning the Criterium over 1.25 miles at St. Cloud this past weekend. Yeah, this horse just seems like he's getting better and better with every race. And so, yeah, and you know, I've seen a lot of people already choosing Line of Duty. He's 10-1 morning line. You know, I don't see better than 5 or 6-1 on him on Friday. I think the word has been out on him for a few days now.
What else? What else do you feather in with him?
On my selections in the betting guide, I did pick Anthony Van Dyke for second. I just think the class might get him, you know, at least a major portion of the purse, even if he has a, you know, not ideal trip from the wide draw. Kind of a long shot I threw in for third on my picks was Uncle Benny, the Futurity winner, who showed a great versatility in his first two starts. He went wire to wire on the dirt at Monmouth, and then he comes from the clouds at Belmont on good ground, going 6 furlongs, and it looks like a mile is going to be, you know, hit him between the eyes here. So I kind of gave him as, you know, kind of a horse to watch among the domestic horses that isn't going to take a whole lot of money.
Kelly Riley, I'm thinking, if I'm not positive, who was it here at Churchill? One of those 2 years, 2010 or 11, was it Rote or one of the two winners of the Juvenile Turf at Churchill last time we were here came from the seemingly impossible post, either Pluck or Rote. I can't remember.
Yeah, I don't either. I can double check that real quick. But yeah, the other thing with Anthony Van Dyke is the fact that I think also the post, I mean, obviously stats are really important to look at who gets, you know, hamstrung by poor posts like that and exactly how bad the damage might be. But I think the other thing is, like, what is it, the type of horse that can overcome that? And, you know, I mean, Anthony Van Dyke is a serious classic prospect for next year. I mean, over the summer, he was the Derby favorite for a while. So he's obviously, you know, extremely talented, top class. But in some of these races, it looks like earlier when he was on quicker conditions, he could look explosive. When he's been when he caught like rain affected ground at the Cara, he was a little more workmanlike. So between, to me, it's like, is he just in principle, is he going to be the type that's going to be able to be as explosive as he's capable of, hung out wide on a rain affected track? And that's my sticking point for him, because obviously, like, just on merit, if we just had like the equivalent of like IQ for horses, just, you know, in theory, you know, or in principle, you know, he's absolutely a terrific animal. Is this going to be the right canvas for him to try to show that? And that's my sticking point for him. Like Vance, I left him second in my picks as well, just because he's too good. You know, he deserves some benefit of the doubt for sure. But in terms of trying to make a win selection, yeah, I'm just a little bit worried about the setup for him. So I too went for Line of Duty. And an interesting thing, you know, speaking of like storylines, Line of Duty is out of Jacqueline Quest, who to me was grievously unfortunate to be disqualified from her 1,000 guineas win a few years ago, and she's deemed guilty of interfering with, I think, Special Duty was the other one. So Special Duty was put up and she was disqualified. So I thought Jacqueline Quest was unfortunate in my eyes anyway, not to officially be a classic winner. So it would be great for her son now to come back and you know, build a terrific career and possibly develop into, you know, a leading three-year-old next year. So the other thing about Line of Duty is the fact that, you know, how he's won his races, that he has just basically been in a pocket and just had to, you know, basically cry out for room. And he didn't get out in time in his first start, but the last couple, he's you know, basically muscled his way through and won well. So to me, the fact that he's used to being in traffic, he's used to, you know, muscling his way out and showing a good turn of foot in the process to do it. So that's the other thing that makes him really interesting in here for me, is the fact that he's going to, you know, if he's in the middle of a scrum, it's like he's used to that. He's been through there, been there, done that. It's not going to faze him. He's going to be, if he gets out in time, he'll quicken. So that's reassuring to me. You know, the horse that, and again, in doing these scouting reports, it's amazing that sometimes the things that, you know, opinions can change, because it's just pre-entry time, or even before pre-entries, and we were just seeing, like, who might come over, and I kept seeing Marie's Diamond list. I thought, gosh, she looks kind of exposed now, you know. But when I started digging, you know, further on him, he got more interesting to me because he just keeps running at 6 furlongs, but he's actually bred to want to go a lot further. He's 5 footsteps in the sand, you know, out of the family of a Kalanisi. His broodmare sire, rather, is Kalanisi, and he comes from a really stout family, the Aga Khan family of Sindar. So, I mean, he's really bred to want, you know, at least a mile, and yet here he is running, you know, good races at 6 furlongs. So he could be the type that really has been crying out for longer. Now he gets the chance to go a mile. So I think he's actually, he might actually, he's a little bit better than he looks on paper to me. Of course, like Anthony Van Dyke, you know, he's drawn post-13, so that's, you know, dreadful post for him. But, you know, he's a classic case of a horse that I really wasn't interested in, you know, until I was doing the scouting reports, and I thought, gosh, this horse has a, you know, has more going for him than I thought just looking at the past performances.
I saw him when I drove in the other morning. It was the first day out of quarantine for the Euros that had arrived first, and Maurice Diamond was in with the group of Gosden horses, in with Roaring Lion and with Enable, and there was the War Horse. Was it Lords of War? And I was impressed with Maurice Diamond. And there's something really annoying whenever there's a feminine name involved in the name of a male horse, because your instant reaction is to always assume that it's a female. It's hysterical. And so when I saw Maurice Diamond, I'm thinking, oh, the filly. And then when I had a chance to, you know, to go get familiar, good points. And certainly, you know, has kept good company. And the stretch out, I mean, that's really the same, very similar concept to the expectations for Uncle Benny. So sort of a European version of Uncle Benny. And by the way, it was Pluck that came from the 13 hole with the late, wonderful Garrett Gomez that won for...
Oh, great.
Team Valor. And that was also the year, that was the race, if you remember this, when the horse that slipped and slid. Yes. When sliding across the grass, it was the craziest thing. He literally just slipped, and he was completely unharmed. But Pluck had to, if you remember, Pluck had to, like, circle out of the way to avoid him.
Didn't he break his, didn't Rough Sailing break his shoulder or something?
I can't remember. I thought he was okay coming out of that. Maybe it was more severe than a non-incident, but it was certainly curious episode here.
Sadly, he did have to be put down. I remember
he did. Okay,
I just double checked it, but I remember that kind of, I was so worried, like the whole rest of that Breeders' Cup, thinking, "Oh my gosh, you know what else might happen, you know, on this course, you know, because that really, especially because of shit, he just slipped, and it's like, oh my gosh, if the footing is that treacherous out there, but that was something, and yes, you're right, that was an amazing performance from him to navigate around that and still get up, but
and of course Team Valor,
you know about the post.
Team Valor involved here with the Black Album, and Mikhail Barcelona will ride. Nice to actually have him here. Let's do this. Let's take a top-of-the-hour break, Casey. Let's step away so we can stay in 3 hours, and we'll come back, and we'll hit the Saturday action. Vance Hansen and Kelly Riley walking through the international players. It's International Thursday with Nick Luck joining us in Hour 3. Tony Black, who we're going to celebrate as soon as we get done with Vance and Kelly. Tony, of course, another winner over the past weekend. He's sneaking him in now with regularity at the age of 67. And we'll also, of course, visit with Haskin and Shulman together. Then later, Nick Luck, Mike Welch, Jay Pribman. Stay with us.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Don't wait. With 14 challenging Breeders' Cup races, 5 Friday, November 2nd, and 9 Saturday, November 3rd, you've got to be ready. Kickstart your handicapping mojo with ExpressBet's free Breeders' Cup Wager Guide, available online at ExpressBet.com beginning Friday, October 26th. Get analysis, selections, price plays, and $100 wagering strategies for every Breeders' Cup race from expert handicappers and broadcasters, plus plenty of stats and trends you won't find anywhere else. XBTV's Jeff Siegel, At the Races radio host Steve Vick, NBC Sports Analysis Nick Luck, and multiple Eclipse Award winner Dick Girardi anchor a powerful team of guide experts. NBC Sports Analyst Eddie Olchek and retired sportscaster Brent Musburger of VSEN will contribute to a revised guide version available Thursday, November 1st. Go to ExpressBet.com now, open an account, and get the free guide and play Breeders' Cup.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.